You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the latest edition of the FWA podcast here with William Hill. Each and every week we got one of the top football writers in the land to join us and look ahead to the live televised games. And this week it's ESPN football writer and editor of The Set Pieces, Ian McIntosh, who joins me on the line. First of all, good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's our pleasure. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, thank you.
Did you enjoy the international break? I know we've seen something historic in Wayne Rooney breaking Bobby Charlton's long-standing record, but it wasn't a terrific international fixture list for all the home nations this time around.
No, I think if you're looking for entertainment, you wanted to look outside of the home nations, particularly towards the Dutch, who have just gone into complete meltdown. I think that they were the most fascinating game, seeing them get beaten at home by Iceland. I mean, just go back 5-10 years and imagine saying that. Imagine saying that the Dutch will get done at home by Iceland. You'd never believe it. You'd be carted off. And then to go and lose 3-0 to Turkey as well. That was the most extraordinary part of the international week for me. Plus, you know, the joy of seeing some less glamorous nations qualifying for the tournament in Austria. Iceland, of course, we've already mentioned. We've seen Wales and Northern Ireland getting so close now that I can almost smell the baguettes. So there were lots of things to look at. I actually think England and even the Rooney story was probably one of the most boring aspects of this week.
I agree entirely. And you missed out San Marino scoring an away goal as well.
Yeah, and the celebrations. Now, that's how to celebrate a goal. I really hope UEFA don't punish him for that, because that was joyous.
Well, when you've waited the best part of, what was it, 18 years, 16, something like that. It was double digits in terms of years anyway. You can celebrate like that.
Yeah, what a goal as well.
The whole thing about the Rooney issue, or the saga involving Wayne Rooney and him breaking that record, football's a team game, Ian. I want to see England produce in an international tournament in my lifetime. That would be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with something like this, you don't want to be too snide about it. There's an achievement, obviously, in scoring the 50 goals. There's also an achievement in the fact that the man's been playing for England for 12 and a half years, which is no small feat in itself. But yeah, there is something a little odd about it, because he hasn't had a good international tournament since his breakthrough tournament in 2004. I think the stats are something like, if you take 2004 out of the equation, I think he's only scored 2 goals in all the rest of the tournaments. So you know, it doesn't feel like the huge celebratory occasion that perhaps it might have done had England and that generation won stuff. But then, you know, that's not entirely his fault. He's only one man of 11.
Do you think they've got a chance going into, obviously they're going to qualify for the Euros next year? Do you think they've got a chance?
Well, look, they're the only nation who's got 100% record. They've blown everything else in the group away. I don't think that you can really compare them to a team like Germany, who, even on a wobbly night against Scotland, still looked absolutely amazing for about 95% of the time. But they're doing fine. There's not really much you can criticise. It's not like yesteryear where there might be players who aren't getting in the squad who could get in the squad. I think everyone who should be there is there. It's not like we're playing outdated tactics or anything. Hodgson's, you know, working and striving and trying to get something decent out of it. I mean, ultimately, I think we're going to do what we usually do. You can get through this get through this first phase of European football now without even winning a 2-3 draws will do it. I think we'll get to the last 8 and then almost certainly be knocked out on penalties, probably by Portugal.
11-1 it is for England to win Euro 2016 here with William Hill. Germany are the favourites at 3-1, France are 7-2, Spain 6-1, Belgium 8-1, England 11s, Italy 14s, 20s bar. Belgium in there at 8-1, single figure price for Belgium. They've got to be the most overrated nation in Europe, haven't they? They must be.
It was funny in the World Cup, after all the years of speculation, this amazing generation of Belgian players, and it took so long for them to get going. It was only really against the United States that they sort of kicked in. They've got a lot to prove in terms of actually doing it on the big stage. Yeah. They are a good team. There's a lot of talent there. I wouldn't look too far past Germany and possibly France on the back of home advantage and a feel-good factor, as it was in 1998. But I don't think there's too much there to seriously challenge them. I'm not that convinced by Spain at the moment either. You seem sort of caught between two generations. I don't think it'll be their year. But Germany are just a terrific side. Even against Scotland, when there were moments of fallibility from Manuel Neuer, which you don't ordinarily get, the movement in that team, there's nothing you can do. You can't go out and press them. Because James McArthur tried that and Muller turned him and the ball was in the back of the net before anyone knew what was going on. And you can't sit back and let them come at you, because they'll eventually get you. They're a superb team.
They are indeed, and 3-1 favourites for Euro 2016. Let's look forward to the Premier League weekend then, and we're going to spin through the televised matches, and we start on Saturday lunchtime with Everton versus Chelsea. 12:45 p.m. kickoff this one. Everton 3-1, the draw 21-10, and Chelsea 21-20. Two teams, Ian, at the moment in different form. I don't think many people expected this sort of start from Chelsea. They look a little bit laboured. Nemanja Matic and Cesc Fabregas had long seasons. Maybe they are taking a bit of time to warm up this campaign.
Yeah, I think the problem is you've got so many little things not quite working out that they're all adding up quite quickly. Diogo Costa hasn't really caught light. Eden Hazard is a fraction of the player he was last season. Matic and Fabregas is the biggest problem, because that, for most of last season, was a dream partnership, and now it's just not happening. Fabregas isn't making any kind of impact on games. He's not making the assists that he was last year. And Matic just looks like a ghost. And he's barely even there. Teams are cutting straight through him. You've got Ivanovic, all sorts of concerns about John Terry. And now they're going to Everton. And the problem with a team like Everton is they pass and pass and pass. And they've got all the patience in the world. And if you've got good structure and good discipline and a good midfield, you should be able to keep Everton at... Chelsea haven't really got any of those things right now. Mm. I think that they're going to turn it around. They're obviously going to turn it around. They're a fantastic team with a fantastic manager. I'm just not sure if this is a week that it will happen.
Yeah, the problem with Everton I have, Ian, is that when they were under David Moyes, they were really solid defensively. Roberto Martinez was the chosen manager to replace him when he went to Manchester United. He's taken them backwards defensively, in my opinion, Roberto Martinez. What do you make to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a thing with David Moyes where his intention, first of all, was not to lose the game. And I don't think Roberto Martinez shares that intention. I think he wants to win, and he wants to win in style. And sometimes it can be quite frustrating, because you think, if you just were a little bit more cynical, everything would be absolutely fine. But also, I think, maybe it's harder as an Everton fan, but as an outsider, as a neutral, I respect that. I've got a lot of time for the pursuit of perfection, especially in circumstances like those at Goodison Park, where there aren't the resources to compete at the level that they used to compete 20, 25 years ago. They are kind of wedded to this ideology, but when it works, it's absolutely incredible.
What do you think to this game then, if you were to put a prediction towards it?
I would predict that Chelsea aren't going to win it, certainly. I think I'll probably play it safe and go for the draw. I think Chelsea will have problems here.
The draw 21-10. Manchester United versus Liverpool is the tea time kickoff on Saturday. Should be hopefully a cracker, this one. 5:30 p.m. Manchester United 19-20. The draw 12-5. And Liverpool in the market at 7-2. Louis van Gaal, Ian, must be the most hated man in the Premier League at the moment. The amount of column inches this man has garnered throughout his brief tenure at Manchester United has been incredible, really.
Yeah, and it's showing no signs of abating, with the story in the Times on Thursday that suggested a delegation of senior players had, you would hope, very bravely approached Van Gaal's office to complain about over-regimented training and tactics. I would not have wanted to be in that delegation. I think I'd have been the one who just slipped off and hid in the toilet as everyone made their way there. I have no idea what's going to happen here. United are obviously trying to do something. They're trying to dominate possession, keep the ball, and go by that old maxim that if the other team hasn't got the ball, then they can't possibly score. And I'm not sure that's always the way that United fans want to see their team play. I want to see a bit of pace and a bit of adventure, and they're not really getting it at the moment. They've also got problems in that Rooney has been pretty dreadful for the entire season. And if it's not working there, everything else is going to fall apart as well. With Memphis Depay and Anthony, I'm still going to call him Marshall for ages before I get it right. Anthony Marshall providing, you would think, an awful lot of pace, that might change, and it might even help Rooney as well. But there's still very little so far this season to suggest that they're anywhere near title contenders.
The suggestion is that David De Gea is going to play in this match as well, and even rumours that he's about to do a £200,000 a week U-turn. I'd do a U-turn for £200,000 a week, I think, Ian. But the suggestions that he might even stay at Manchester United after the current season, I find that inconceivable, really, that he's not going to go to Real Madrid. They need him in this team, Manchester United, though, with the backup keepers they have.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly convinced by Sergio Romero, even before Swansea's horror show. I'm certainly not now. I think there has to be a certain amount of pragmatism here. David De Gea, in a season coming up to the European Championships, needs to be playing football. Manchester United need David De Gea if they're going to achieve what they're trying to achieve. So everyone's got to get on board. Sometimes that can help in negotiations if everyone's got the same common aim. The idea that he might stick around for any longer is kind of baffling, because if that was a possibility, then why wasn't that sorted ages ago? If it's a question of money, then why wasn't the money made available? And from everything we heard, that wasn't what the issue was. The issue was that he really, really wanted to go to Real Madrid. So I think I'll believe that one when I see it, though things in football constantly surprise me. So it's a very, very strange one. And then, of course, you've got Liverpool. What are Liverpool? They were showing signs of being a bit more solid at the back. I thought Dejan Lovren was man of the match in the first game of the season against Stoke, and then against West Ham. What was that? It was like a greatest hits of all of the worst things he's ever done in his life. It was stunningly incompetent. I'll be amazed if he manages to keep his place after that. I just don't know what kind of team Liverpool are right now.
This match is difficult to predict, isn't it? Because Manchester United haven't shown enough to suggest they should be odds-on to beat Liverpool. But as you mentioned, Liverpool coming into this on the back of that 3-0 drubbing at Anfield against West Ham, it's difficult to suggest backing them on this occasion.
I wouldn't go anywhere near it. If I was going to have a bet on it, the only thing I'd bet on is a red card. Because you know what these games are like, and particularly with a later kickoff as well. Sometimes you get them at 12:30 and they're a little bit subdued, shaking off the hangovers and stands. 5:30, that's enough time for everyone to get warmed up. I think bet on a red card for that one, and you might get something. Bet on a result, you've got my utter sympathy.
2-1 for there to be a red card in the match.
There you go, that's like printing your own money.
It should be. This Premier League fixture, 16 red cards. Only one more fixture in Premier League history has produced more. Do you want to guess at that one, Ian?
Liverpool-Everton?
It is. Liverpool-Everton. Hey! 20 sending-offs in Premier League history. Liverpool versus Everton. Let's look at Sunday's live matches then. Sunderland versus Tottenham, first of all. 1:30 p.m. kick-off this one. Sunderland 16-5. The draw 9-4 in Tottenham. At 19-20, we do have a headline offer here: Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win, in the market at 5-2. Sunderland rock bottom, Ian, of the Premier League table. Spurs haven't started much better though. Spurs, after that opening day defeat at Old Trafford, they've drawn at home to Stoke and Everton, and they've drawn away at Leicester as well. So, not being a vintage start for Spurs either.
No, absolutely not. But I've got to say, 5-2 for Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win, I would crawl over broken glass to give you a 5 for that. I don't think Tottenham have been doing an awful lot wrong this season. There are a couple of issues. I'm concerned about how they managed to take winning positions or positive positions and somehow mess them up. I mean, the first 20 minutes against Manchester United, they bossed them at Old Trafford. Then Manchester United scored against a run of play and Tottenham tripled up. They were leading against Leicester and they let that one slip. Mm. But in the main pattern of their play seems to be okay. They're not doing anything horrifically wrong. And I don't think Harry Kane's played particularly badly. You know, you have incidents like the chance against Everton where it was actually a fantastic piece of goalkeeping from Tim Howard. It's just sometimes strikers look like they're never going to score in a million years. I'm not really getting that with Harry Kane. I think he'll come through. Sunderland, on the other hand, while they've started to look a little bit more solid, are still essentially a terrible, terrible football team. It might be that they're going to gain confidence from the results that they've picked up. But when you look at the performances, you know, Villa absolutely battered them. Swansea absolutely battered them. You know, there's not an awful lot there to make me think any differently from the beginning of the season when I said they'd get relegated.
Yeah, Tottenham 19-20 looks good. Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win, a good bet as well at 5-2. A lot of people have written about a possible second season syndrome for Harry Kane. Do you think he's a player that will feature both in Spurs' side and in the international side for many a year, Ian?
I hope so, because Harry Kane's the kind of player, and obviously if you're an Arsenal fan, I'll let you off this one, but I think most people love watching Harry Kane play. He plays like a kid who's won a competition to get 5 minutes at the end with his favourite team, and he plays like that all the time. And that's something that it should be fitted as standard to Premier League players, but you know, you really notice it with him. There will be a certain aspect of second season syndrome. Externally, other teams, they're going to be ready for him. They're going to have watched him. They'll know his strengths and weaknesses. He might find himself with two men on him rather than one man on him. And there's going to be internal stuff as well, the own personal pressure to live up to the expectations. You never know how people are going to respond to that. Will they overthink it and get the yips? But I think in terms of talent, he's a better player than people give him credit for. And I was as much to blame as anyone else, because the first couple of times I saw him, I just thought, you know, goofy English centre forward puts himself about
as
a bit.
Well, yeah.
You know, yeah, you just think he's like, oh, you know, if he's come through the youth system, so he'll get a chance. But if he was playing in the second division, there's no way Tottenham would sign him. And then the more you watch him, the more you think, hey, he's much more than that. Much more. He's got great vision. Real in-game intelligence. And the thing I love about him is he will clatter back 30 yards to win a header and then clatter back up forward to get into the right position. He seems to think everything in the final third is his responsibility. He really wants to get involved in everything. He's a fantastic player. I've got a lot of admiration for him.
He does clatter, doesn't he? He's cumbersome.
He really does.
He's cumbersome, but in a good way.
He would not make a very graceful ballerina.
And we look at Sunday's 4 p.m. kickoff next. Leicester versus Aston Villa. Leicester 10-11. The draw 23-10. Aston Villa 100-30. This is one of those matches that you'll only watch if you watch football with exclusion to everything else. You're not interested in anything else that's going on in the world. You just watch football all the time. This one might be on the radar then.
Oh, no, I think this could be quite an entertaining game.
Do you think
game.
So?
Yeah, I do. I've got Leicester completely wrong. This pod is turning into a list of things I've got wrong. But I thought that Ranieri was a really bad choice for Leicester. But not because he's a bad manager. He's not a bad manager. But it was such a dramatic shift in character from Nigel Pearson. Nigel Pearson was not removed for footballing reasons. It would unsettle the squad. It hasn't done that at all. And it's completely new shape, 4-4-2, though they were 4-1-4-1 against Bournemouth. But there's lots of pace in there. There's lots of adventure. They're not the kind of team that's come up from the Championship and is just sort of scrapping to survive. They're actually going out and trying to win games. And then with Villa, I mean, the continuing Tim Sherwood saga is absolutely fascinating. He's Yeah, we talk about Harry Kane being written off as sort of typically English. I think there's aspects of that with Sherwood as well. I was at Selhurst Park a couple of weeks ago, and he gave Palace a bit of a fright because they turned up expecting him to stick to sort of 4-3-3 formation, and he'd changed everything. He had a formation specifically designed to snuff out everything that Palace did, and it worked really well for the majority of the game. He's got a lot of new players, a lot of characters to deal with, and it's going to take time for them to gel. But he's doing it quite well, and they should have got 3 points against Sunderland. I think they'll be absolutely fine. I think they'll be one of those teams that loses a lot and wins a lot and then winds up somewhere in 13th. And Leicester quite possibly the same once this season settles down. So I think this could be a very, very good game. I would get on this for more than 4 goals.
If you're looking at the goals tally in this one, over 3.5 goals is a big price. 9-4 over 3.5 goals in the game. So have a look at that. And we finished the weekend on Monday night with West Ham versus Newcastle. 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday, this one. West Ham 5-4. The draw 21-10. Newcastle 12-5. Just a typical start to the season for West Ham. Wins at Arsenal and Liverpool. Losses at home to Leicester and Bournemouth. Predictable from West Ham so far.
I have no idea where this one's going. What's going on with West Ham? How can you beat Liverpool and Arsenal in their own stadiums and then lose the games that they've lost? There is a certain amount of settling in to be done by both teams, in fairness. So lots of new players, new manager, new structure. The one thing I think you can count on here, again, is red cards. Newcastle have had 2. West Ham, over the course of the season, including Europa League, I'm not sure how many it is, but it's more than you generally expect in an entire season. And they both, Newcastle really need to get a win, because while there is rising positivity amongst their fans that the owner's actually buying players and they've got a competent manager in, they haven't scored in 3 games and they haven't won a game yet.
Yeah.
So, that honeymoon period is going to wear off at some point. But this is another one that's completely, you may as well just throw darts at the betting slip for what's going to come out. I think I'll go with the safety shot and go for a red card.
Red card in this match. Unfortunately, Alexander Mitrovic is suspended for this one.
Well, that just ruins everybody's fun, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? Yes, it's 3-1. They should allow him to keep playing anyway. And it should all tally up at the end of the season. There should be a totting up procedure where you get shot out of a cannon or something after getting 10 red cards, because that would happen with Mitrovic. He's the maddest madman we've seen in a long time.
You've got to wonder if by the end of the season he'll have been suspended for more minutes than he'll have actually played. I mean, there's a very real chance that could happen. Someone's got to just grab him and just go, calm down. It's fine. Just take your time. Get into the game. He had no arguments against the red card. You can't go in on players like that. I'm not sure whether that was a group thing from Newcastle, because they picked up so many bookings against Arsenal. I wonder if there was a bit of they don't like it up them during that game. They'll have to be careful of that with West Ham as well. They need to keep all 11 players on the pitch.
They do. The thing with Mitrovic is that we're 4 games into the season here, and Steve McLaren already said he's given up. He just said, he is what he is, and that's how he's going to play from now on, which might not be the right attitude.
No, exactly. I think there's no form of behaviour that can't be changed if you work at it. There's talent there, and he wants to make the best of it. He should be working with people. And McLaren's a very forward-thinking manager. He always has been. And I'm sure there's people there that he can talk to. Just find a way to maximise his talent, because it's either that or he'll just have one of those weird peripatetic careers where he wanders around Europe on sort of short-term loan deals and 6-month contracts that always get paid off at the end, and then he'll wind up in the Qatari League or something, and that would be a real shame. He's a player of great talent.
Ian, what's your best bet this weekend then? We've been through a few of the matches. I know you like that Tottenham bet, don't you? Harry Kane to score and Tottenham
to win. Before that, I would have said back Arsenal to beat Stoke. It's at the Emirates. I think Arsenal have won the last 7 out of 7 against Stoke at home.
Yeah.
Stoke are without a win in 7 away games as well. They've got suspensions. Afellay and Charlie Adam both out after being sent off in the last game. Arsenal haven't started in fifth gear, like, yeah, as can often be the case for Arsenal. But it's at home against a Stoke team that's still trying to find its feet. I like what Mark Hughes is doing there, but I think it will take about 18 months to really come to fruition. And we've seen this before with Hughes and Stoke when he first turned up. He had a couple of half-decent results when he started, and then they went a very, very long time without a win and almost got sucked down to the relegation zone. And the back end of his first season, it all clicked and up they went and powered themselves back up to, I think, 9th they finished in the end that year. Mm. I think you're going to get something similar this time because it is quite a drastic change of personnel. And the biggest loss is Steven Nzonzi, who is an absolutely hugely underrated footballer. But, you know, they've got players like Afellay, who won't be available, and Shaqiri, who will be available. They'll get there in the end, but I just don't think they'll do it this weekend. If you want a nice, safe bet, I'll go for an Arsenal home win.
Ian, absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning. Enjoy the footballing weekend, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future.
I look forward to that. Thanks so much for having me.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.